Welcome to High Country, Politics in the American West. My name is Sean Diller. Regular listeners might know me from Heartland Pod's Talking Politics every Monday. Go to heartlandpod.com for information on all our political podcasts and a link to support our work on Patreon. Sign up as an official podhead for just $5 per month to access all our premium podcast segments and political writing. To join the conversation on Twitter, find us at the Heartland Pod. All right, let's get into it. Another round of Trump versus the establishment in Arizona's gubernatorial primary. Wealthy developer Karen Taylor Robeson has been pouring money into television advertising for months in her quest to win the Republican nomination for governor, leaning on her cash advantage to cut into former TV news anchor and Trump-backed firebrand Carrie Lake's large lead. Lake has been the heavy favorite in the race for months, and early polling showed her with a roughly 20-point advantage over Robeson. But things have changed in recent months. Robeson has spent heavily to make her pitch to voters. She's gone on the offensive against Lake, GOP gubernatorial candidate Matt Salmon dropped out and backed her, and Governor Doug Ducey endorsed her. Last week, Robeson purchased roughly $330,000 in broadcast TV ads, mostly during primetime shows. That dwarfs the $50,000 or so of airtime that Lake reserved, much of which was during cheaper daytime programming. In the latest public polling in the race by a firm called High Ground, Lake's lead has been slashed from more than 20 percentage points to a gap of less than 4, a statistical dead heat within the poll's margin of error. High Ground president and CEO Chuck Coughlin said that Lake may need to build beyond her base of loyal Trump supporters as Robeson leans in with establishment Republican voters and unaffiliated voters. Robeson has also outpaced her opponents by a wide margin on digital spending. Records from Google, which owns YouTube, show her campaign has spent $173,000 to advertise on the platform, including video and banner ads. Lake, meanwhile, has spent just $6,000 on Google ads. So this is definitely a race to watch. This is a swing state, a longtime Republican state that currently has two Democratic senators and voted for Joe Biden by a slim, slim margin of votes. So who's at the top of the ticket for the Republicans for governor could absolutely have an impact on the U.S. Senate race in Arizona and who controls the Senate overall. Care workers call for Bill of Rights. In more than 15 years as a home care worker, Marilyn Rowe has dealt with a lot. There are a few easy days providing at-home healthcare services to her elderly or disabled patients, some of whom Rowe has seen for a decade. But lately, she says, working conditions in the industry have taken a turn for the worse. In the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, a shortage of personal protective equipment drove workers to resort to wearing oven mitts and other improvised solutions. The wages paid by for-profit providers haven't kept up with cost of living, and Marilyn Rowe is among the many home care workers who have filed wage theft complaints over unpaid hours. It takes a certain type of person to be in this industry, Rowe said in an interview outside the Colorado Capitol. You've got to have a heart. At a rally on the steps of the Capitol Tuesday, members of the Colorado Care Workers Unite and other labor groups urged lawmakers to pass a Care Worker Bill of Rights. Advocates want the potential legislation to include guaranteed livable wages, minimum benefits and travel compensation, stronger protections against wage theft and other employer violations, a reporting system for workers who experience harassment, assault, or discrimination on the job, and more decision-making power for workers in the home care industry. Jose Torres Vega, an activist with the Colorado Cross Disability Coalition who requires home care, spoke in support of the measures at Tuesday's rally. Care workers become part of our family, he said. They allow us to have the life that we deserve. Nearly 90% of the 2.3 million home care workers in the United States are women, and 62% are people of color. They care for all kinds of patients, from children with congenital disorders to adults with traumatic brain injuries to elderly people with dementia or Alzheimer's. And in addition to providing healthcare treatments, they're often relied upon for housework, errands, and companionship too. In the coming years, demographic trends could put further stress on the home healthcare system. State demographers estimate that Colorado is the third fastest aging state in the nation. Its over 65 population is projected to grow by nearly 50% between 2018 and 2030, and tens of thousands of additional care workers will be needed to make up the difference. But advocates say crisis-level worker shortages already mean that many patients are sitting on waiting lists or receiving suboptimal care. Marilyn Rowe said it can sometimes be hard to put on a smiling face for her patients, given that she can't help worrying about whether she'll be able to pay rent or drive to work the next day. But even amid the challenges, she said leaving the industry isn't an easy decision. I get attached to my clients, said Rowe. If I'm not there, who's going to take care of them? And I think every state and the federal government too can be doing a lot more to support home care workers, which are just essential in countless communities and households around this country. Oil trains rolling through Colorado. The Biden administration is set to approve another key permit for a new railroad in Utah that is expected to drastically increase the amount of crude oil hauled through Colorado by rail, dismissing objections from environmental groups and Colorado communities along the impacted route. Securing the right-of-way is a critical step for the project, which is backed by a public-private partnership between seven Utah County governments, Drexel Hamilton Infrastructure Partners, and the Rio Grande Pacific Railroad Company. Utah's oil and gas industry has eagerly supported the proposed rail line, which is projected to significantly increase oil production in the Uintah Basin. The oil will be hauled through Colorado on a route that passes through Glenwood Canyon along the Colorado River, then through the Moffett Tunnel and Central Denver. Up to 10 2-mile-long trains would travel the route each day. And because the Uintah Basin produces a type of oil known as waxy crude, the tank cars used to transport it need to be heated, creating additional safety and environmental risks. Dozens of cities, counties, and water districts along the route have voiced opposition to the project, including Glenwood Springs and Eagle County, which has joined environmental groups in suing the U.S. Surface Transportation Board over its vote to approve the project. At least 21 oil train derailments have occurred in the U.S. and Canada since 2013, according to a 2021 report from the nonprofit Sightline Institute. Such incidents frequently result in fires and oil spills, including the 2016 derailment of an oil train in Oregon's Columbia River Gorge, where an estimated 42,000 gallons of crude oil were spilled. More than 100 environmental groups from Colorado, Utah, and other western states have voiced their opposition, objecting to the railway's potential to do tremendous harm to the environment. Johnny Vasek, executive director of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, said this area is already facing water and air quality issues. The railway will quadruple oil production in the Uintah Basin, resulting in dire consequences for air quality, public lands, water, public safety, and the climate. In another letter sent earlier this year, more than 50 Colorado city and county governments urged Democratic Senators Michael Bennett and John Hickenlooper to speak out in opposition to the project. The senators said that they shared the community's concerns, but have said nothing else as the project seems to be moving forward. And if you'd like to contact Senators John Hickenlooper or Michael Bennett, contact information is at senate.gov. Gun rights groups versus the people and common sense. A far-right Colorado gun rights group has sued the town of Superior, arguing that the town's recent firearm regulations are unconstitutional. In June, the Superior Town Board voted unanimously to pass updated regulations regarding assault weapons, the purchase and sale of firearms in the city, and large-capacity magazines. A 2021 Colorado state law allows local governments to regulate firearms, legislation that came in response to the March 2021 shooting at the Table Mesa King Supers in Boulder. City governments in Boulder, Lafayette, and Louisville all approved gun violence prevention ordinances in June of this year, and the Longmont City Council is considering one now. Rocky Mountain gun owners, however, assert these provisions violate the Second Amendment. Their lawsuit references a decision last month from United States Supreme Court that struck down part of New York's 160-year-old concealed carry law. Dudley Brown of Rocky Mountain Gun Owners said, "Given the recent Supreme Court decision, none of these recent gun ordinances should be able to withstand the new rules established by Justice Clarence Thomas." Huh? RMGO's executive director said that while the group does not currently have plans to go after other Colorado cities, he called the lawsuit against Superior the tip of the spear for subsequent litigation. So this issue is clearly going to get more and more charged. If you want to get involved with common sense gun reform, some great organizations are Moms Demand Action and Every Town for Gun Safety at everytown.org. Our ongoing series, The Housing Crisis in Nevada. Almost all the apartment units, 94%, constructed in Reno and Henderson, Nevada during the last decade are categorized as luxury units, a finding that stands out given Nevada's distinction as the state with the fewest low-income units compared with the state's number of low-income households. For every 100 low-income households in Nevada, there are just 18 affordable units for those renters, a shortage that works out to about 80,000 units statewide. City of Henderson spokeswoman Kathleen Richards said that while the city of Henderson can control where housing is built through land use and zoning ordinances, the developers determine the price points based on market conditions. The city has tried for 20 years to collaborate with developers to build inclusionary housing, but has met with wide resistance from the industry. Nevada cities, unlike those in some other states, do not have inclusionary zoning provisions that require developers to include affordable units. A one-bedroom, one-bath apartment at The View, a typical new apartment complex in Henderson, rents for $1,670, according to its website. Rent at Aspire at Sunridge Heights starts at $1,800. The National Low Income Housing Center said that across Nevada, there is a shortage of rental homes that are affordable for working-class families. Many of these households are severely cost-burdened, spending more than half of their income on housing. These individuals are more likely than other renters to sacrifice necessities like food and prescriptions to pay the rent, and to experience unstable housing, eviction, and homelessness. So my take on the approach to fix housing in this country right now is that new developments don't help someone who's deciding between paying rent and paying for medicine. Rent stabilization, or legal limits on annual increases in rent, are the best way to solve this problem, in my opinion. GOP blocks bill protecting women. Senate Republicans blocked Nevada United States Senator Catherine Cortez Masto's bill that would protect patients in states where abortion is banned who seek to travel out of state to access services. Senator Cortez Masto, along with U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington, recently introduced the Freedom to Travel for Healthcare Act of 2022 as Republican-led state legislatures ramped up efforts to restrict women who are pregnant from seeking abortion services in other states. While speaking on the Senate floor Thursday, Cortez Masto called the GOP efforts blatantly unconstitutional and said they've created profound uncertainty for patients, healthcare providers, insurers, and employers across the country. Anti-choice state legislators in Missouri, Texas, and Arkansas have said they want to prosecute women who travel to obtain an abortion, as well as providers who offer abortion services, and even the many employers who have said they will support their employees who need to seek reproductive care in another state. Senator Cortez Masto said her bill would protect providers and anyone who helps women travel to receive reproductive care. Republican United States Senate candidate Adam Laxalt, who's running against Cortez Masto, has previously called Roe v. Wade a joke and said he thinks its return back to the states is important, according to the Nevada Independent. The Nevada Courant reached out to Laxalt's campaign for comment on Senator Cortez Masto's legislation and his views on states restricting patients from traveling to seek abortion services, but his campaign did not respond to requests for comment. Cortez Masto, along with the majority of congressional Democrats, have warned that if Republicans retake Congress, they will introduce a national ban on abortion. Nevada has already seen an influx of patients from out of state seeking abortion services. Providers say the influx could result in longer wait times and lead to advanced gestation, which means increased risks for the woman seeking the abortion. The Biden administration announced Monday that federal law protects providers who offer abortion services to save a patient's life or the health of the mother, even in states with abortion bans. But around the same time Cortez Masto was speaking on her legislation, Texas announced it was suing the Biden administration over federal rules allowing abortions in medical emergency. Okay, we're about 100 days or so from the election. I think it's clear the stakes are high. Well, that's it for me. From Denver, I'm Sean Diller. Original reporting for the stories in today's show comes from Colorado Newsline, Arizona Mirror, and the Nevada Courant. Thank you for listening. See you next time.